Follow me and ponder the question. What if?
Hey, Swamp Kittens. Welcome back to I Want My MCU TV, the show where we react and really and respond to the latest offerings on Disney Plus and its ever-expanding galaxy of Marvel-centric TV shows. I'm Lisa Schmeiser, and with me, as always, are Don Melton.
Yo.
And Kelly Gamont.
Sorry, I'm late. Coffee run. Needed a breather. Got you a double macchiato just the way you like it.
And while I regret to inform you that this week's episode is once again regrettably light on the greatest animal of all, the swamp kitten, it is pretty heavy on Loki and all sorts of other mischief and mayhem. So we will be discussing episode 3, season 1 of Marvel's What If. I'd like to remind both regular viewers and anyone who stumbled across this podcast for the first time that our episodes are typically divided into 3 parts. Instead of recapping the episode, however, we're just going to what was changed from the MCU canon to build out this episode. Our second part of the episode is where we react to the episode that we just watched in ways that are both, you know, positive and more critically assessing. And then finally, we have the beloved segment, Really? Where we peppered Don Melton, our resident Marvel Comics guru, with questions about Marvel Comics and background in history that may help us understand why some of the details in these TV shows come across as especially surprising, delightful, or, you know, impishly impious. And with all that throat clearing out of the way, let's get into episode 3 of Marvel's What If, where it looks like the big revision is, what if Hope Van Dyne had been a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent and died on the job? Although, I will say, guys, when I watched this, I thought at first the big what if was going to be, what if someone kept taking out the Avengers before they could become the Avengers? And then I realized over the course of the episode, the really big what if was, what if Hank Pym's hadn't effected a complete break with S.H.I.E.L.D. or a successful break with S.H.I.E.L.D.? So Hope went into the agency. Do you agree or disagree that this was the big pivot moment for this timeline?
Yeah, I agree. And I didn't get that until after I watched the whole thing and I was going, what the hell? Because I didn't, it you know, it's sort of like I didn't get what was going. I realized right there at the end what the pivot point was. And it was like, could you have vagued this up? And if you can confuse a nerd like me, can you imagine what
mere mortals
thought of this episode?
So what I liked about this episode, and fam, audience, swamp kittens, we're moving right into reactions here. What I liked about this episode was how it really did seem comic booky with the third act reveal of someone we didn't really know about, or I should say the casual viewer would not have known about, and the attentive viewer would have only picked up if they were a nerd and B, trying to think ahead like 4 steps. Cause, you know, there's that scene where Natasha's in the library and you see all these cards pop up, and among the cards is Janet Van Dyne and Maria Hill. And then you hear her say, how did a woman who's been dead for 2 years access this a few days ago? And the first time I watched this episode, I was like, Janet? Because I was like, maybe that's our twist. And then later you're like, oh, it's Hope. And that's the twist. So it was very comic booky because I've lost track of the number of comics I've read where everybody's trying to figure something out. And there's like a breadcrumb trail that you're following along with. You're like, of course it should be this. And then boom, some other character you've either forgotten about because they were 50 issues ago or is just being introduced now pops into the frame. And you're like, wait, what?
Well, or in a comic book, to be fair, it also could be somebody that they killed spectacularly last summer.
Yeah.
Who wasn't actually dead this whole time.
And for me, the problem was I misheard what she said. I didn't hear her say Hope. I thought she said Hulk.
Because me too.
I'm old and hard of hearing. So I went into the whole final scene mm-hmm. going, what the heck does Ant-Man have to do with this? When I, you know, realized that
that was the person. She was saying it's about hope. Yeah.
Yeah, it's about hope. And then it was like afterwards. So I was very annoyed at this episode, both from, mm-hmm. you know, pulling the rugs out and having sort of skanky production values there, not, you know, I did want it spelled out more for me. That's really what mm-hmm. I wanted. I wanted to be a little bit straightforward. That said, this was possibly the funniest episode they've done so far. I mean, even funnier than the last episode. Yeah. The humor here, mm-hmm. especially at the expense of Chris Hemsworth, was just amazing.
When they just kept talking about his hair, like just for like 3 minutes straight, all anybody could talk about was his hair.
Coulson was right. He's gorgeous.
That was great. And when he's dying, like even when he's rotting, he smells like lavender. So I liked that a whole lot.
The dynamic between Coulson and anybody is always going to be great because Coulson is great. Mm-hmm. I love him. And so he was super fun.
Yeah. So the thing is, I loved this episode. Like, it's not, I didn't love it as much as I loved episode two, but I know, Kelly, you and I have had slightly different reactions to how much we liked each of the episodes. Cause with episode one, I'm like, it was all right. It's fine. You know, I enjoy the thought exercise they did. And then mm-hmm. with this one, I was like, oh, I can't wait to see how this is going to turn out. And it felt like they just kept doing all of these pivots. Cause, you know, you have the murders and then you think you figure out who did it. And then there's the whole scene in the graveyard, which is just fantastic. And and then Loki's like, nah, nice planet you have. I think I'll stay here a while. And then you see Nick Fury go for, I found this hunk of frozen shield. And then Carol shows up and I was like, oh man, this is like a compressed little movie. I liked the zippy pacing and I liked how many of the Flagstone MCU projects it touched on. And I'm wondering if that's why I liked it more, because the first episode just feels like such a really narrow silo in the MCU.
It does.
And it's retelling one movie, whereas this one is like, oh, there's all this stuff that happens that ripples out in all sorts of ways.
Yeah, it was basically fate. It was basically touching every stone in phase one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it like,
just like the Avengers. Yeah. I mean, that was the point of them.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And then it throws in like a little bit of phase two could have been like not phase two if Hank Pym had gone off the reservation.
I got to say that the voice acting by Michael Douglas and the animation mm-hmm. they did for him was top notch, and
it
was very clear that Michael Douglas really enjoyed this.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But can we talk about Samuel L. Jackson's performance beginning to end?
It was great beginning to end.
Well,
It was a little stiff. Did you
really?
Yeah.
No, like I wanted to point out when I was 100% was in the graveyard scene. Because the first time I watched it, when one of the first things he says, and I can't quote exactly, but one of the first thing, you know, when he's like, you were standing at my daughter's grave. And then you hear the character you think is Fury say, she's not going to mind, she's dead. I was like, mm-hmm. that feels flip for Nick Fury, because he's pragmatic and he'll tweak people, but he's not malicious.
This is true. Yeah. That was.
And then as he keeps talking, like he's just got this swingy, cheerful cadence that seems completely out of line for the conversation.
It's not him.
It's this swingy, cheerful, detached cadence. And then when he says, and why did you kill Thor, Prince of Asgard? I kick myself for actually not catching this the first time I watched. She's like, why did you kill Thor, Prince of Asgard? And then Hank is like, they would have recruited him anyway. And
see,
the first note of outrage you get in that scene is where he's like, so you murdered him because you could? And I'm like, oh my gosh. And what I really liked is how Samuel L. Jackson played Tom Hiddleston playing Loki, playing a mm-hmm. part, and then it switches back again. And I was like, okay, this is good. This is fun. This is fun because it took a minute to catch it. And he did a great job changing it around. And then in the final scene, when he's back with, you know, the Captain's America and Marvel, and and he's talking about SHIELD always stands for something bigger. Well, I'm like, okay, this is the fury I recognize from all the Captain America movies. It was great.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree that that part's good. The one thing where I was not surprised was the graveyard scene. I knew immediately that that was not Fury.
Yeah.
Right, because it was obvious that that was going to be Loki. Because,
okay, was it obvious by the logic of storytelling, or was it obvious by okay.
I didn't even have to hear him say anything. It was like, and as soon as he said something, it was like, bingo. And I did like that part of the performance. What I was getting at the stiffness was earlier on. It just, he seemed a little off for Nick Fury, because Samuel L. Jackson is just always, you know, sort of loose as a goose. And oddly enough, Clark Gregg gave more of the right vibe for doing an animated voiceover than Samuel L. Jackson. That said, Samuel L. Jackson's performance, for example, in the film Captain Marvel, was just absolutely delightful. Yeah. And in a sense, that's almost animated because it's barely him. You know, they they younged him by about 30 or 40 years there. And so I thought that part was great. What I'm aggravated at is with this is the sort of sloppiness of the whodunit. Mm-hmm. And where does this go? What was the point? This goes back to my whole problem with what if stories that, you know, sort of annoy me. That said, Lisa, I agree with you that touching all the bases, all the, you know, Avengers stories, that was cool.
I did appreciate that. I have to say, like, that was the thing about this one that I liked, because we got Ant-Man, you know, the Ant-Man section of the world that hasn't bumped up against a whole lot else except in the last couple of Avengers movies. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we didn't see a whole lot of them the rest of the time. So it was nice to see them and other Avengers, and you know, we got a little bit more you know, because we got Betty, which, even though I don't think they ever said her name, we got her
Dr. Ross, I think, and that was it.
Yeah, they called her Dr. Ross.
So we did get her, and like, I don't know if we've seen her in anything except like the first Hulk movie. Mm-hmm. So it was nice to see her pop up, because like, it took me a second to figure out who that was. So I did appreciate some of the I'm not sure how to put it. I like the reach of it that we did get, you know, like you said, we touched a bunch of different sections mm-hmm. of the universe. And I think the problem is that when we got to the end, I really wanted to see the second episode of this storyline.
Yes.
More than I wanted to see the one I just saw. I think that's my problem with it, because I want to see what happens now that Carol has shown up to go toe to toe with Loki, who's decided that he runs things now. And that sounds super fun to me. And, you know, and what are they going to do with Hank at the, you know, now that they've got him in, maybe in custody, like, you know, it seems like it wouldn't be too hard for him to get out from under them. So what's going to happen there? And, you know, and what about Betty, and what are they going to do since they didn't actually get the Hulk? And, you know, like, all of the fallout from this one is the stuff I want to know about. And so I don't know if it's just because Captain Marvel is my favorite, or because Loki is always super fun. So if we have more Loki to talk about, I kind of want to talk about more Loki. But that was kind of the, I think that was the reason that I was not super jazzed by this episode. But also, I think the animation style was a little different, and it wasn't an animation style that I super enjoy. It didn't look very comic booky the way the last one did and the way the first one did. it's sort of like auto-tune, and they turned the auto-tune up really, really high on this episode, and it was like real low on the other two. Because Lisa, I know you mentioned that in our previous episode about the first two. So I wonder if maybe it's like that on top, and so maybe that was why I wasn't super jazzed about it. I did appreciate like the plot twists and things, like, you know, having it be Hope, and you know, and that it was Hank who was behind it all along. And, you know, and the pivot in the middle, and like Betty pops up out of nowhere and that kind of stuff. Those were things I did appreciate, because I like the unexpectedness of those things. But like as an episode, as an entertainment unit, as I like to call them, it did not delight me the way the previous two have.
Whereas I'm just like, oh, this is great. I liked how the Black Widow looked more like her comic book counterpart and not her MCU counterpart.
Yes.
I really appreciated just the way they depicted her physicality. Because you guys remember like when they introduced Black Widow in Iron Man 2, they really played up the va-va-voom aspect of it all. And this Black Widow looks like somebody who like has to do a lot of burpees and hit a speed bag. And I liked it. I liked how she looked. And I think Lake Bell did a tremendous job of channeling a little bit of Scarlett Johansson's smoky voice, but giving it her own spin on somebody who is naturally cautious, but has a tremendously dry sense of humor. Like, I loved it. And, you know, so we're obviously split on the Samuel Jackson stuff. I will admit, I didn't think Mark Ruffalo is made for animation, but it was nice to hear his voice. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, there's that recognition. I was surprised by how much I enjoyed Jeremy Renner doing Hawkeye. Well, you know, you say that. I feel like the character's gotten the shaft in the movies, and his costume design was ridiculous in The Last Avengers. I mean, I don't know who he crossed at Marvel to like just get to what they got to with that. But like, there has to be somebody who's... like, there's somebody who settled like a decade long score. They're like, where they're like, okay, we're going to give you a haircut that looks like every edgelord in a bad X-Men comic, and then a sleeve tattoo that looks like something you reverse Google image search when you're trying to determine whether or not the guy who hit you up on Hinge is a predator. It was just a terrible look. It looks like something that, again, someone settled a grudge with. But like, you get the same actor and you don't have to look at him, and he does the voice work, and it was great. You see this Hawkeye who has this crisis of conscience and then slumps over dead. And I was surprised by like, I was like, that's like a better shake than he got in several movies.
Yeah.
And again, like we've pointed out, Clark Gregg was great.
Frank Grillo was good too. I enjoyed hearing him again.
You know what? I was like, I could take him or leave him. So, I've liked him in the movies a lot. But like, it actually took me a minute. I had to pause and be like, oh, that is Frank Grillo, you know?
Well, getting back to one of my favorites in Kelly's, Tom Hiddleston as Loki, I thought his interactions,
he was so good.
Interactions with Fury on the battlefield there were quite hysterical. And
yes,
once again, it's very clear that Hiddleston knows how to do humor.
Would have watched a whole episode that was like the two of them mixing. Like watching them make that deal would have been awesome. Like, how great would that have been just to get to hear that conversation where they made that deal?
Yes.
And all of that, like, it would have been so much fun. I think I would really have appreciated that, because their dynamic is great. And we don't get a lot of that really in the movies, like the two of them interacting. So that happens a little bit, but not, and especially not on the same side, you know. That was also part of what was sort of entertaining about it, was like, you know, each of them recognizing the utility of the other in the situation that they're in, and making the best of it. And that was fun to watch.
I mean, I kind of like the idea of now I kind of want to see the sequel of how Fury takes back his planet.
You know? Yeah. See, like I said.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got me. But oh man, like, it's, I find it interesting that we're all that I have such a different opinion on this one. but there it is. I do. Can't help it. I'm sorry.
And so far, the first one is still my favorite. So
yeah,
we'll leave it at that. So
the second one is still my favorite.
I was going to say, if I had to rank them, I would go 2, 3, 1. Whereas for Don, what would your ranking be?
1, 2, 3.
Wow. Oh, man. Is it so how are you feeling about going into next week's episode?
I feel fine. You know, even if I feel even if I do the old man cranky thing, you should take it with a grain of salt. I mean, they'd have to keep me away from watching this show. Gang, like I said, you know, the conversation I had with my sister, if this was the only thing we got Marvel on TV, you know, I'd be doing, I'd be in the end zone spiking the ball. I'm just like, this is fantastic. Yeah. How can you not love these stories and playing around with them? No, it's fantastic. But you can also be critical of things, right? Yeah. You know, you can say what you liked and you didn't like. And the thing that annoys me the most so far is the, what if, and then what if we had this idea and just dropped it on the damn floor? Right?
Yeah.
And that's like every episode so far. Mm. And if every one of them is like that, then I'm going to want to punch somebody at the end of season one. So I'm like, Kelly, I want to know where it goes. Don't tease me like that. It's like, I can have a whole bunch of what if ideas too. You're still wasting Jeffrey Wright. I mean, he's doing like a toaster commercial here.
That was WandaVision.
That was WandaVision. There you go. So it's like, I want to see something. I want to see something with him and see him really get to a stretch, because if this is all he's doing, let him at least meander on like Rod Serling or something like that. Or,
well, I wonder if we'll see an episode where he has to defend merely watching.
Yes.
Because that would be where Jeffrey Wright could just wipe the floor with everybody, in terms of acting them out of the studio.
I would love if that happened so that he got more to do. Maybe that's our setup, is like, bad stuff happens in every one of these one way or another. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he could have helped and did not. And I don't know, maybe somebody will end up, you know, catching on or something, and we'll hear more about it. I don't know. I mean, you know, we have to have a theory portion of the program, right? So there you go. Yeah. Well,
if we don't have Kelly's home, if Kelly's home for Wayward Theories doesn't get a regular contribution, the rest of the theories just get bored and start tearing it up.
Well, by the way, one thing I would say, once I did understand the story that they were trying to tell at the end, everything was internally consistent with the divergent points in the canonical timeline and made sense for the characters. Because Hank Pym, even in the MCU, had a short fuse and was a bit of a crank. And in the comics, he went back and forth with being a genius and a savior, and like, you know, one of the worst people you would not want to be in a room with. So, I mean, they've kind of been all over with his character in the comics. So that was not a shocker. And like I said, Michael Douglas, you know, I could listen to Michael Douglas all day. He's just fantastic.
Well, let's talk about him a little bit. Let's move to really.
Yeah, let's move to the really. Because, Don, I have a big really question for you.
Sure.
My first exposure to Hank Pym was actually in the Mark Millar book, The Ultimates, where it's...
what year is that from?
It's what if... you know what? I'm going to look that up because I just wanted to, I'm going to look it up on one of our favorite open source websites, not mentioning them by name. but it was a 13 issue comic book series that ran from 2002 to 2004. Brian Hitch did the art, which is why it took so long to get 13 issues out over 2 years.
Oh, there it is. Okay. Looks like the first one was March 2002.
Yeah. And the premise behind, they sort of like, so this, bear in mind, this is before the MCU was a twinkle in anybody's eye. And Hitch actually modeled Nick Fury after Samuel L. Jackson, which is why, like, the minute he stepped out during the Iron Man stinger, I was all, you know, because I was like, I've seen something in comics. And anyway, the whole point of the Ultimates is, what if Avengers, but they're all kind of jerks and extremely flawed. And Thor may or may not be leading a messianistic cult.
So it's the boys, then, is what you're telling me.
More, it's, yeah, it's not as nasty as the boys, but like the ethos is there.
Okay.
Lots of elements of the MCU have been lifted pretty wholesale from the Ultimates. For example, in that book, Captain America has a really difficult time adjusting to modern culture because he's a dude who grew up during the Depression and a world war, and that's played as a big plot point here. We find out that Hawkeye has a girlfriend named Laura and three kids, which, you know, again, we saw transposed. But in this iteration of the Ultimates and the team they assemble, they have Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne. And the thing is in the Ultimates, Hank Pym is just because he's so intellectually insecure, since he knows he's not as smart as Tony Stark and gets reminded of it a lot, and for a lot of other reasons, he like rings Janet's bell, sends her to the moon regularly. So my impression of him, fairly or unfairly, was this is a guy who's a terrible human being and terrible to his partners. And then you get the Hank Pym, who's in the MCU, and he's delightfully crabby and tremendously contrarian. And I very much enjoy how he like exists to poke a finger in the eye of people who have crossed him, but you don't get the sense he crosses that line. You also don't get the sense that he feels intellectually insecure. What I wanted to ask is, what is mainstream Marvel Comics Hank Pym like? Like, where does he fall in this continuum?
Okay, let me start, because the Ultimates was like, you know, that's like a what if for Hank Pym and several of the other characters. It's, you know, they can do anything with their IP that they want. But when Hank Pym started out, this was it's probably 1962 in Tales to Astonish. I don't remember the issue. But that was the original, you know, Ant-Man story. And it didn't take too long, about a year, for them to do Shrinky Shrink stories. And then he also he figured out a way to use his Pym particles to become Giant Man, to go the other direction. And then when he became one of the founding members of the Avengers, the technology sort of like stuck, and he stuck at one size, like about 10 feet tall, and he became Goliath. And then that was in the early 60s, mid 60s. And then later on, he became Yellow Jacket. And so he was unlike in the MCU. You talk about, you know, competition with Tony Stark. You know, Tony Stark was known for some of his devices for S.H.I.E.L.D. and obviously the Iron Man armor, but it was Ant-Man who was the father of the Vision, the father of Ultron, right? He's the one who created Ultron, not Tony Stark. So there wasn't that whole, let's see whose brains are bigger kind of stuff, insecurity that was back in the 60s and 70s. But in a way, he... other than some of those really good stories, especially with Ultron, he was like Hawkeye. He was like a supporting character Avenger, right? You know, because you had Cap and Iron Man and Thor, much like they are in the MCU, as being the top line Avengers. And so I think what people, writers later on did, was sort of channel that and say, you know, what if there were, you know, what if the backstory there? I think originally Janet Van Dyke when she has the fancy name, Van Dyne. I think
Janet Van Dyne. She's a socialite, right? Yeah, like that's her deal. Exactly. She's a debutante.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Van Dyne. She's a she was a debutante, socialite, and stuff like that. And so mm-hmm. that's where I think that comes from. So really kind of interesting. But I remember, you know, all the mm-hmm. different wacky suits he had, and I remember the original Ultron stories, which I thought were back from the 60s, which I thought were fantastic ideas mm-hmm. and has been recycled like crazy. I know a lot of people don't like the second Avengers movie, but I actually think it does the best of capturing the Ultron vibe back from the 60s. Uh-huh. I gotta hand it to Joss Whedon for that, for getting that out. Although he's much like apparently Hank Pym from the Ultimates, but we won't go there. I think he was an interesting character. Mm-hmm. He was probably the most interesting in the Ultimates, and the way they decided to portray him in the MCU mm-hmm. as sort of a previous era superhero.
Like a Cold War era.
Yeah,
As opposed to a Perestroika.
And when I realized what they were doing with that, I was like, oh God, that's genius. And to get Michael Douglas to play him, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I'm sitting in the front row now.
Because my understanding of Hank Pym, limited as it is, was that he knew he was not as smart as Tony Stark, Reed Richards, or Bruce Banner. And that was a source of tremendous, it was a tremendous ego blow to him. Is this something that comes up in the main MCU, or is that something that was mostly confined to Ultimates, which is his big tragedy is knowing that he's smart, but he's not that smart, you know?
I never got that vibe back in the 60s.
Uh-huh.
Even in the 70s, I never got that vibe from him. And so I think that's a later thing. Which I think it's really, really a cool idea. And, I think Scott Lang becoming Ant-Man, which is completely different in the comics, where basically in the MCU, Pym set him up to steal mm-hmm. the stuff, but in the comics, Scott Lang really did steal it. As I recall, I think he really did steal it.
According to Wikipedia, which I trust as a secondary source, because Don, you are my primary source on comics.
Yes.
Scott Lang is an ex-convict and electronics expert hired by Stark International, which enables him to steal the Ant-Man suit from Hank Pym, who had given up the name. And bear in mind, this is Wikipedia. There's a lot of dependent clauses here, to help his sick daughter. So Scott does do the stealing because he's a desperate dad type of thing.
For his daughter. Yeah.
Yeah. That's more or less the way I recall that set. Good. Mm-hmm. Good job, Wikipedia.
Well, yes. It's not quite as good as you, Don, but you know, in this case, we're going to use it as a secondary source.
Yeah. So,
crazy
stuff later on where I think Pym, and this is when I really stopped watching mm-hmm. or rather reading a lot of comics, where he did go off and he and Janet divorced, and he did do some violence. And this was back in the 80s. It wasn't the 2000s. So he did go off the deep end. So there was that darkness, but early on there was nothing like that. There were, I think in the 80s, they were trying to figure out interesting things to do with the secondary Avengers. This is why you had mm-hmm. stuff like the West Coast Avengers and the other stuff, It's like, how do we take some of this IP and do something else?
That was the thing that I was curious about, was how he stacked up to the, how the movie version of him stacked up to the comic version of him, because this comes in between. Yeah. Because I'm sure there's a scale.
So the thing I really like about movie version Hank Pym, MCU Hank Pym, is he's as smart as Howard, but he's more of a devoted family man.
Yeah.
We see that he's got a real, he has a marriage with Janet that was built on more teamwork than we've ever seen Howard and Maria display. And he was clear.
We haven't really seen Maria all that much.
No, so, yeah. That tells you everything. And
we know she can play the piano.
Yes, well. So can lots of first graders who take lessons. That doesn't tell us whether or not she can go into SHIELD.
That doesn't tell us anything about her. Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, we know that Hank and Janet have a really they have a relationship where like their work and their romantic partnership are just part of the same thing. Like you can't have one without the other as far as they're concerned. And we see that they're both super hands-on parents for a given value of superheroes who are hands-on parents. And then, and then after Janet is disappeared onto the quantum realm, we see that, you know, Hank is obviously still all up in Hope's life. It's not necessarily like the healthiest dynamic, but he's determined to be there in a way that, you know, Howard never was. And so I was kind of interested at Marvel and the MCU, which historically don't consider family life to be much of a dramatic topic. I was interested that they do have this character who's a pretty big supporting character who has made family as big a priority as work. And then in this, and then in this what if, like you see what happens when it goes, when he loses family, and that's when he goes completely off the rails.
I think that is a spot on analysis and comparison. And I wish they'd played that up more.
Yeah.
I wish they would have spelled it out a little bit more as an object lesson too. Because a lot of things you can do in what if stories is like, oh crap, you know. This is what happens when you do go down that path. And I don't think I think they did it for shock, but not exploring the character enough. But that's what you get for the show being a half an hour in length.
And I think the point of this episode that we're talking about was I mean, Hank Pym was the thing you drop in the third act to make everyone go, oh, because we're all supposed to be and while the impetus is a grieving father, like the story is supposed to be, if you don't have these people who come together to deal with Loki, then Loki will invade and win in another way. But
he will invade and be incredibly fun.
Yeah. Hi, trickster god here. Oh my
gosh, that's so good. Could you answer that? I'm kind of in the middle of something. Yeah.
Oh god, it was so funny. It was just so, and I feel like this is actually such a good shout back to the Loki series as well, because again, people have this image of, oh, it's Loki and we loved him from Thor Ragnarok and he gives his life in an Avengers movie, and like, no, that's like a Loki he grew over a decade. This is the same guy who, like, remember, like launched an Earth invasion in New Mexico.
Yeah.
And what I liked about the way
sucked out a guy's eye.
Yeah. But like,
oh yeah,
but don't forget, like, he's a prince. Like, what I loved about this episode is he's a prince, because my daughter's like, I thought he didn't even like Thor, and I was like, Trix, he's coming down to wage war on Earth, not because he liked his brother, but because he perceives it as an insult to the kingdom. You don't kill the top brass without expecting retribution, and Loki is just doing statecraft here. And I like that. Bingo. Like that this Loki is operating from a paradigm of royalty and never lets you forget it. It's my favorite.
Yeah. I think part of what made him so much fun was that he also got to go back and play this.
Yeah.
Like, after all the stuff that happened to our Loki. I don't know where this falls with regards to when they were actually shooting the Loki series or anything like that, but it definitely came after the second Thor movie, and it definitely came after a fair amount of the Avengers stuff had happened, and we'd gotten the version of Loki at the end, you know, who did in fact give his life. And so that's part of what I think was fun about listening to him do this, was because he sort of got to go back and visit like 1.0 and really chew on some scenery with it. And I think that's part of what made it so much fun, was because he got to go back to that with a little extra gusto and, like, you know, like being in that headspace of, like, you know, it's just a planet, like, I'm going to take it over and, you know, I don't even have to reschedule my lunch plans. And I appreciate that part of it. And it, that's part of what made it so fun to see him now, is after we got the Loki that we got in the show, and that Loki obviously not quite as affected by the other version of Loki that we got from the movies, you know, because we get one that jumps off at a different point. So we've had two interesting versions of Loki, and this one goes back to, like, OG Loki.
Yes.
And getting to, like, watch him be that guy again, was, that part was super fun. And that's part of, like, the unexpectedness of this episode that I did enjoy, was that piece of it, like getting to go back to when he first came to Earth and all of that, and sort of his deal at that point was a hoot, I would say.
I'm nodding, by the way.
Yeah, no, it's nice to know that the Ultimates Hank Pym is really just, is an extreme example of a what if.
Yeah,
well, because some of the stuff I like about the whole Ultimates universe, like Ultimate Spider-Man, is great, for example. And some of the stuff I liked about the Ultimates was, I did like them looking at some of the characters in a fresh way. Like, what if Hawkeye was a family man, and then mm-hmm. someone betrays him and goes after his family? What does he do? Or what if Captain America isn't just some stodgy dude who's the leader of the Avengers and generally wrecks everyone's fun, and is instead like a dude dealing with PTSD and profound cultural dislocation and is incredibly lonely? You know, I thought that stuff was great. The rest of it, though, like, Hank Pym deserves better, is I think where I'm going with this. And yeah, I
could see that.
And I think the Hank Pym in the MCU might actually be my favorite iteration of Hank Pym as we know him. Cause Marvel needs a helicopter dad. And you know, in this what if episode, we saw what happens when the helicopter dad crashes, but, all told, not bad. All right. Any final thoughts before we close down a rousing and divisive episode of I Want My MCU TV?
No.
No? Nope. No final thoughts? All right. No, anything on the wish list?
Now, that's a good question. What part of the MCU haven't we visited that we would like to see? Because we've gotten a lot of Avengery things, but truth be told, mm-hmm. a lot of the MCU has been the Avengers.
Yeah,
I'd like to see me some more Hulk rather than just Hulk exploding. Which I thought was kind of cheesy. I'd like to do.
That's so wild.
Yeah,
it felt like a cop out. Like, we got here, what do? We just make him keep hulking.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That felt talk about hulking weird. Out. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to see some more Hulk.
Marvel presents the big guy.
Yeah. So anyway, that would be cool. I would like to see another take on Guardians. And really, this one was whetting my appetite for Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
I want to see some Captain Marvel. I want to see some Kree. And I want to see some Kree.
That was on my list.
Yeah.
Kree and Skrulls.
Yeah.
Kree and Skrulls, yeah. Definitely.
I want to, I feel like we're going to get something secret invasion-y, or we should get something secret invasion-y. Like, what if the secret invasion happened some other way or something? So that was on my list.
And I want to see Vision.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Because I'm sure Paul Bettany would do the voice, because he's, you know, they would have to, like, bar the door.
He might have just already showed up at the studio and been like, I heard you were doing Marvel Animation, so I'm just here in case you need me.
Yeah.
Hey, well, this is how it all started for him, too. I mean, he thought he was just going to come in and
he
do
was
some
a voice
work.
To start with. I feel like it's only appropriate he gets an episode.
Yeah.
Can you imagine what a bait and switch that is? Like, you're happily eating a plate of French fries, and then someone is all, guess what? You're going to be in spandex for the next 10 years. And you're all, wait, what?
Yeah.
I thought I was just supposed to sound worried inside a helmet. Nobody told me about the spandex part. You know?
Yeah, we know. Here's Chris Hemsworth number. Yeah. We'll talk to you later.
I don't like to surf.
Remember that I run a home. And so what I would like to see in Marvel's What If is more Marvel. I want X-Men. I want Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man, definitely.
I want the we haven't had a chance to see.
Are we allowed to get X-Men yet? Or no. Are there teams of mutant attack lawyers still watching the IP there?
I don't think it's time. Also, oh, what just flew into my head and then flew out again? Fantastic Four.
Oh, like, yes.
Give me some Marvel.
Yeah.
Not MCU.
Also, some whole lawyerly thing, I think, is keeping the Fantastic Four out of the MCU. But
the thing that's keeping the FF out is probably nuttier than what's keeping the Hulk out.
I'm sure of that. And we, you know, and Spider-Man's whole deal. I'm sure, but I would like to see, I'd like to see them kick that door open a little bit just because, like as far as the cinematic universe goes, like with What If, it doesn't count, right? Like it doesn't have to be, you know, it's not a movie, and you know, what ifs are one shots. So they don't have any impact on any of the other story or anything like that. So each of these is like its own individual unit. So it's not like they have to worry about violating any of that piece of whatever agreement somebody signed in the 90s. But that's the part that I like. I think that would be interesting if we kick that door open a little bit more, because I still feel like part of what if is supposed to do for us is get everybody comfy in the multiverse.
Yeah.
I got an idea. What if Inhumans, but the show didn't suck?
Oh, Did you see that? I made it through like three episodes, and I made it
through one episode, and oh, wow. Then went in the next room and heaved. It was so bad, and it was, the cast was fantastic. I love all those actors.
I think I watched one. That's why I was so I think I spent the first episode confused. Watched the second one to make sure I wasn't wrong, and
you were not wrong.
Gave up. Like
you were not wrong.
I sat down like. I watched it and I went, look, I know what lower quality TV looks like. Okay. I've watched Days of Our Lives for basically my entire life. Mm-hmm. And so I know what a goofy ass storyline is going to look like. I know what overdone looks like. I know how to tell when someone's gnawing on the scenery. And like this all was just like
how do you squander?
It wasn't even fun bad. Like that's the thing. It didn't even make it all the way to being entertained, like Rocky Horror, you know how it comes all the way around? Like, yeah.
That's why I kept trying to watch it, because I'm like, it has actors who normally do whatever they can to elevate the material. Like I've seen Ken Lung in a lot of really bad TV.
Oh yeah.
I would love like an oral history of why it failed so badly.
That'd be great. I would. How did this get made? Should talk to them about it.
But yeah, I want a Marvel. What? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the material. The material was just, the writing was terrible.
I want a Marvel. What if, or what if the Inhumans, but good. Okay. That's our new thing. Let's start the petition.
Yeah.
All right. I'm on it. All right. So are you carrying this one around on a separate clipboard from the More Loki Gator petition, or are they?
I'll take clipboards? Any alligator at this point. Like, let's have a what if, where what if, and it's all alligators all of the time. Like, and like the thing is poor alligator Thor has those tiny little arms, so it's really hard to hold the hammer.
Oh no!
So, oh my God, alligator! Oh, alligator! Right. Hawkeye has to use his mouth to pull back the bow.
We've lost Lisa entirely. Just, I think we're gonna have to wrap up around her.
Just all right, so there we go. All of our listeners know, on our pre-show before we actually say, you know, recording, she does this all the time.
You know, at some point, if we have to do a membership drive, we should just let you listen to the pre-roll sometime. Yes.
Oh. Good Lord. Yeah. Are you saying that because you like members or because you don't?
No los dos.
I'm kidding. Speaking of our listeners, however, if you have feedback, if you would like to pitch to Lisa the Swamp Kitten version of your show, Swamp Kittens,
yes,
you can do so by emailing mcutv@theincomparable.com, mm-hmm. or which comes to us directly, or you can get us on Twitter at @IWantMyMCUTV. And we're around, and you can get each of us individually on Twitter. It's all fine. Like, you can find us on the hell site itself. It's great. Mm-hmm. So
we are all on the Tweety box.
I just want to point out, you can give us feedback.
Yep. Or as my mom calls it, the Twitter face page.
It's a lot of,
I think my mom accidentally calls it the Tweety box because I told her one time, I just think it's funny to call it the Tweety box.
Oh my God. And I've just seen a preview of what my daughter's going to do to me.
Oh, I'll tell you a story later and you'll appreciate it. But anyway, you can email us, and Lisa will appreciate mm-hmm. all Swamp Kitten and Murder Lizard adjacent content. So if you have anything like that, please send it to us. It will make her so happy.
Yes. Yes. More alligators. More alligators. And with that, my little swamp kittens, we are going to wrap up another episode of I Want My MCU TV. I want to thank preeminent Dr. Hank Pym biographer, Don Melton.
Yo.
And I want to thank Kelly Gamont, proprietress of the Home for Wayward Theories.
Hashtag Steve, Steve, Steve. I heart Steve 0704.
And I've been Lisa Schmeiser. Good night, everybody.
Too bad this might spell the end of the world. But that's a story for another day.